suspicion, but Darby shivered anyway as she typed another draft text. "Hey, Mom, if you find this message on my phone," she hesitated. "I want you to know that I didn't stop fighting. I didn't give up. I'm not a victim. I chose to get involved. I'm sorry, but I had to. Please know that I always loved you, Mom. And no matter what, I'll always be your little girl. And I died tonight, fighting to save someone else's. Love, Darby." 2:56 a.m. On her way back into the lobby, she folded Jay's cryptic little "Don't trust them" napkin and tucked it in her back pocket. Why, she wondered, a sore pit growing in her stomach. Why shouldn't I trust Ed and Sandy? She wanted to ask the girl, but Ed was too close.
"Jay, did those assholes mention where they were driving you?" he asked. "Before they got stranded up here on the pass, I mean?"
"No," Jay shook her head. "They're here on purpose."
"What?"
"They were looking for this rest stop. They were looking at maps today on the road, finding it."
"Why?"
"I don't know," she said. "I just know they wanted to be here."
Tonight,
Darby thought, tying her hair up into a ponytail. Another loose puzzle piece. Another unsolved fragment. It made her stomach hurt. She couldn't imagine why Ashley and Lars would intend to trap themselves up here with their hostage, at 9,000 feet, among a handful of travelers. Unless they'd planned to kill everyone here all along. The homicidal brothers had been traveling with a handgun, 5 gallons of gasoline, and a jug of bleach. Maybe Ashley had something evil in mind. As she considered this, Ed asked Jay something else that caught her attention.
"Did they take your meds when they took you?"
Darby's ears perked. "Meds?" Jay wrinkled her nose. "My shots?"
"Yeah, meds, shots, pens, whatever your parents called them."
"I don't think so."
"Okay,"
he sighed, pushing his thinning hair back.
"Then tell me, Jay, how long have you gone without them?"
"I keep one in my pocket for emergencies, but I used it," she counted on her fingers. "So 4 days.
Ed exhaled like he'd been gut punched. "Wow, all right."
"I'm sorry."
"No, it's not your fault."
Darby grabbed his elbow. "What's this about?"
"Apparently, well, she has Addison's."
Ed lowered his voice and pointed at Jay's yellow bracelet.
"Addison's disease. It's an adrenal condition with the endocrine glands, where they don't produce enough cortisol for your body to operate. 1 in 40,000 people has it. Requires a daily medication, or your blood sugar plunges on you."
He stopped himself. Darby touched Jay's wrist and read the bracelet. "Addison's disease. Steroid dependent." She turned it over, expecting more details, like dosage instructions, or a doctor's phone number, or a recommended emergency treatment. But that was it. That was all. 4 stamped words. Steroid dependent. "So what then?" Darby asked. "Ashley didn't know how to medicate her?"
"They've been medicating her incorrectly, I think. Dumbasses probably Googled it, then broke into a drugstore and grabbed the first thing with steroid in the name. Just made her sicker."
"I thought you said you were a veterinarian."
"I am," Ed forced a smile. "Dogs get Addison's, too."
She remembered the sharp odor of vomit in Lars's van, Jay's tremors, her exhaustion, her pale skin. This explained all of it. And now Darby wondered, if you're prescribed a daily steroid shot, how bad can missing 4 of them be? to Ed, she lip-synced. How serious? He mouthed back.
Later.
Ashley and Lars are still by their van, Sandy called out from the window. They're doing something. I just can't tell what.
Preparing to attack us, Darby said. No point in sugarcoating it.
She paced the room, inventorying weapons. 2 carafes of hot water, Sandy's pepper spray, Ed's lug wrench. It was a hasty battle plan, but it made sense. When the assault came, Sandy would monitor the locked front door and barricade with Jay, calling out the attacker's movements. Darby would guard the men's room window. If the brothers attempted their entry there, as she anticipated, she'd surprise attack Lars or Ashley from the blind corner with a splash of scalding water. And Ed, with his wrench, would be a roamer, moving to whichever side of the visitor center he was needed.
What's...
Sandy wiped her breath off the glass, squinting outside.
It's been 10 minutes. Why haven't they tried to get inside yet?
To mess with us, Darby guessed. To make us nervous.
It's working.
In the building's silence, her ears began to ring. The air felt pressurized. The ceiling rafters felt lower. The floor was bare, blotted with loose napkins and mop tracks. Somehow, moving the table had actually made the room feel smaller. The air was stuffy, all recycled carbon dioxide and sweat. Darby kept waiting for someone to make a joke to relieve the tension. No one did. On the long drive from Boulder, she'd hated the quiet stretches between songs, because that's when her mind went into overdrive. Remembering things she'd called her mother. New pains. New regrets. And now she rethought Ed's answer to her question, when she'd asked how serious Jay's 4 missed injections were. He hadn't mouthed later. No, she realized with a sinking heart. He'd said something different. He'd said, fatal. Jay would die if she remained under the care of Ashley and Lars tonight. Even if they hadn't planned to murder her, they were still clueless about how to handle her adrenal condition. And her time was running out. But really, it made perfect sense that the Garver brothers would turn out to be tragically inept kidnappers. Ashley may have had a cruel streak a mile wide, but he clearly wasn't methodical enough to quarterback a ransom operation. He improvised too much, and he toyed with his victims. And Lars? Just a whiskered man-child. A soft and undeveloped psyche Ashley had molded into his own morbid image. These 2 overgrown kids were unprepared for the complexity and scale of what they were attempting. They weren't remotely qualified for it. They were something far worse. In a dark Walmart parking lot a few years back, watching a crackhead with a buzz cut break into their Subaru from the safe lights of the home and garden section, she remembered her mother holding her shoulder and telling her, "Don't fear the pros, Darby. The pros know what they're doing, and do it cleanly. Fear the amateurs."
"There,"
Sandy cupped her hands against the window.
"Okay, Ashley just carried something out of his van, an orange box?"
Ed knelt to Jay.
"When they come, you're going to get behind the counter. You'll close your eyes, and whatever happens, you won't come out, understood?"
The girl nodded.
"Okay."
Over Jay's head, Darby mouthed to Ed, "How do we treat her?"
We get her to a hospital. That's all we can do," he whispered, leaning close. "I've only dealt with it in dogs, and even then, I've only seen it a few times. I just know she's in a shock period right now. Her body isn't creating adrenaline. It's called an Addisonian crisis. So if things get scary or intense, her body could trigger a seizure, or coma, or worse. We need to control her stress level.
and keep her environment as calm and peaceful as possible. Sandy gasped from the window.
Ashley's got a... Oh, God! Is that a nail gun?
Yeah, Darby said, turning back to Ed. Not happening. Ashley clicked a battery into his Pazlode IMCT cordless nailer and waited for the little green light to blink. Back in his father's days, the golden years of Fox contracting, to get any sort of power behind a fired nail, you needed an air compressor and several yards of rubber hose. Now it was all batteries and fuel cells, stuff you can carry in your pocket. Ashley's model was bright, Sesame Street orange, 16 pounds, the Pazlode decal worn away. Nails fed from a cylindrical magazine, which had always reminded Ashley of the drum on John Dillinger's Tommy gun. The nails' lengths are measured in pennies, for some ass-backwards medieval reason, and these ones were 16 pennies, or roughly 3.5 inches, designed to spear into 2x4 lumber. They can penetrate human flesh up to 10 feet away, and at distances beyond that, they're still twirling shards of vicious metal, screaming through the air at 900 feet per second. Cool, right? Ashley may have spectacularly failed at the day-to-day management of Fox contracting, but boy howdy, he sure loved the tools that came with it. Fortunately, his father was now too busy forgetting his own name and shitting in a bag to see what had become of the family legacy under Ashley's leadership. Both specialists unceremoniously laid off. The web domain expired. The phone still ringing sporadically, but going to voicemail. Sometimes driving the Fox contracting van with that peeling cartoon character felt like piloting a big corpse, a dried-out husk of his father's dreams and hard work. See, when Wall Street failed, the feds stepped in and bailed them out with other people's money. When your little mom-and-pop outfit fails, well, you have to take the bailout into your own hands. It's the American way. Ashley hefted the Pazlode nailer and palmed the muzzle with his left hand, defeating the nose safety with an effortless push. Then a squeeze of the trigger. Thwump. A 16-penny pierced the front tire of Darby's Honda. The black rubber deflated with a hiss. Lars watched. Ashley kicked the tire, feeling it soften. Then he leaned and fired another. Thwump. Into the Honda's rear tire. Don't be nervous, baby brother. We'll sort this out. Ashley circled the car and pierced the other tires as he spoke. Thwump, thwump. Just some dirty work tonight, and then we'll go see Uncle Kenny, okay?
Okay.
His voice lowered, like he was sharing a dangerous secret. And something else I forgot to mention. Remember his Xbox One?
Yeah.
He has the newest Gears of War.
Okay.
Lars's smile solidified, and Ashley felt a pang of sympathy for his dear baby brother. He wasn't cut out for this, but that wasn't his fault. How could it be? He'd had no control over whether his mother chugged 2 vineyards a day while she'd carried him. Poor Lars had been genetically kneecapped before he even drew his first breath. The shittiest of shitty deals. Quickly, he double-checked the light on his Pazlode. Still green. Cold weather was notoriously hard on their batteries, and he only had 2. The last thing he'd need would be for his nailer to go powerless when he had it pressed to Darby's temple. How embarrassing would that be? In terms of raw firepower, Lars's .45-caliber Beretta Cougar was the obvious winner. You don't enter a gunfight with a cordless nailer and expect to win. And it would take quite a few of these 3.5 inchers to reliably put a human down. Worse, the projectiles themselves rarely penetrate anything beyond 10 feet. But Ashley Garver loved the nailer, he supposed. for all the things that made it a deeply impractical man-killing weapon. He loved it because it was heavy, cumbersome, inaccurate, scary, and gruesome. All artists express themselves through their instruments, right? This was Ashley's.
Come on, baby brother, he pointed with his nailer. Get your war face on.
The Paslodes cylinder magazine held 35 16-penny nails, fed in little five-nail racks. He'd fired four. He still had more than enough to turn a human into a screaming porcupine. Walking beside him, Lars racked the slide on the Beretta the way he'd been taught, dutifully checking to ensure there was a chambered round.
Gears of War 4, right?
He asked as they walked.
Not last year's?
That's what I said.
Okay.
And don't you dare shoot Darby, Ashley reminded him. She's mine.
They're coming.
I know.
Now they have a nail gun.
I know, Sandy.
Jay clasped her temples like she was warding off a headache, rocking against the flipped table legs.
Please, please don't argue. Ed, they're going to kill us.
He pointed his lug wrench at her.
Shut up.
Darby took the child by the shoulders and pulled her back, away from the barricaded window, toward the center of the Wanapani lobby. Any stress or trauma could trigger a seizure. This is literally life and death. I have to keep her calm. Would that even be possible tonight? She tried to remember the exact phrasing Ed had used. An Addisonian crisis? And she crouched down to Jay.
Hey, Jay, look at me.
She did, her eyes brimming with tears.
Jaybird, it'll be okay. No, it won't.
They won't hurt you, Darby said. I promise I won't let them. By the door, the argument intensified.
Ed, they're going to get inside.
Then we'll fight them.
You're just drunk. If we try to fight them, we will die.
Sandy's voice rattled.
I will die. You will die. And she will die.
She's wrong. Darby pulled Jay further back, behind the coffee counter. She patted the packed stones with her palm, solid enough to stop a bullet. But stay behind this counter, like Ed said, okay? Just in case.
They won't hurt me, Jay whispered. They'll hurt you.
Don't worry about me. She recalled the girl's eerie message on the napkin and scooted closer, lowering her voice to a whisper so the others wouldn't overhear. But tell me, why don't you want me to trust Ed and Sandy? Jay looked embarrassed.
No, it's nothing.
Why, Jay?
I was wrong. It's nothing.
Tell me. At the front door, Ed and Sandy's argument reached a screaming fever pitch. He held the lug wrench out at his cousin, brandishing it like a weapon, his voice thundering now.
If we cooperate, they'll kill us anyway.
She swatted it away.
It's our only chance.
I thought... Jay hesitated, pointing over the countertop at Sandy, finally answering,
I thought, at first, that I recognized that lady, because she looks exactly like one of my school bus drivers.
All the way in San Diego. Darby's world froze.
But that's impossible, Jay said. Right?
She didn't have an answer. What were the odds of that? What were the odds of two other travelers, having come from the same West Coast city as the abducted child, of all places? Here, hundreds of miles inland, stranded at a remote highway rest stop in the Rockies. The oxygen seemed to drain from the room. San Diego.
But, that's not her,
Jay added quickly, gripping her wrist.
She just looks like her. It's just a coincidence.
No, it's not, Darby wanted to say. Not tonight. Tonight, there are no coincidences. By the front door,
Ed and Sandy had stopped arguing. They were both listening now, standing in petrified attention. Then Darby heard it too. A pair of muffled footsteps. Boots crunching in the packed snow outside, approaching the door. A two-man death squad. Ed backed away from the door, red-faced.
Oh, Jesus. Everyone get ready.
Ed, Darby said. Where did you guys say you are from?
Not now.
Answer the question, please. He pointed.
They're right outside the door.
Answer the goddamn question, Ed. The brothers' footsteps halted outside. They'd heard Darby raise her voice, and now they were listening, too.
Ashley was less than 6 feet away, waiting on the other side of that thin wooden door.
She even heard rodent faces, familiar mouth breathing outside, like a hospital ventilator.
We drove from California, Ed answered.
Why? What city?
What?
Tell me the city you're from.
Why does it matter?
Answer me. Darby's voice wobbled with adrenaline, with the two strangers inside and two killers at the door outside. They were listening, too. Everyone was listening. Everything hinged on what this ex-veterinarian said next.
Carlsbad, Ed said. We're from Carlsbad.
Not San Diego. Darby blinked. Oh, thank God. He threw up his arms.
There, Dara. You happy?
She exhaled, like emptying her lungs after surfacing from a deep dive. It was just a coincidence. Jay had been mistaken. It's easy to match faces among half-remembered strangers. And apparently Sandy had a doppelganger in San Diego with a morning bus route. California was a massive population center, so it wouldn't be unheard of that Ed and Sandy would just so happen to hail from the same state as the abducted girl. Everything else, just nerves, just paranoia. Silence outside. The brothers were still listening through the door.
I told you, Jay whispered. See, I was wrong.
Carlsbad, Ed hissed to Darby, his face glistening with sweat. Carlsbad, USA. What else do you need, for Christ's sake? State? California. Zip code? 92018. Population? 100,000.
Sorry, Ed. I just had to make sure. She was vaguely aware of Sandy moving up behind her, and she was turning to face the older woman when Ed continued.
County? San Diego County.
And that was the last clear thought that went through Darby's mind before a pressurized spurt of icy liquid fired into her eyes. Then pain. White-hot pain. Witching hours. 3:33 a.m. Ed screamed,
Sandy!
But Darby's world went bloody red, an acid splash. She felt the cells of her corneas sizzling with violation, simultaneously scalding hot and freezing cold, like bleach under her eyelids. It crowded out all of her thoughts. She hit the floor on her kneecaps, eyes clammed shut, clawing at her face, rubbing away beads of chemical burn. Tiny fingers grasped her elbow, tugging her. Jay's voice in her ears.
Darby, rub your eyes.
Sandy, what the fuck are you doing?
Eddie, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Jay's voice louder.
Rub your eyes.
Darby did, furiously, gasping with pain, mashing them until her eyeballs squished in their sockets. She forced her eyelids open, peeling them back with her fingernails, and saw a cloudy soup of red and orange, blurred with incendiary tears, the watery outlines of flooring tiles. The room spun, hurtling around her like a rotating stage. She coughed, her throat thick with burbling snot.
She saw dark droplets hitting the floor. Her nose was bleeding again.
Hold still.
Jay lifted something heavy. Darby was about to wonder what it was, but then a crash of hot water came down on her face. The carafe, she realized, rubbing her eyes. Smart girl. Enraged, shadows moved above her, stomping footsteps.
Darby?
Jay yanked her elbow harder, twisting it against her shoulder socket.
Darby, come on. Crawl. Crawl.
She did. Palms and kneecaps on the cold tile, half blind, dripping. Jay guiding her with pushes and pulls. Behind her, the voices intensified, booming inside the room, pressurizing the air. Sandy, just explain to me what's going on.
I can save you.
Don't touch that door.
Please, let me save you.
Sandy gasped, begging.
Eddie, honey, I can save your stupid life tonight, but only if you shut your mouth and do exactly what I say.
Darby heard a hollow, metallic click behind her. It was familiar, but she couldn't identify it. She'd heard it several times tonight, though, enough to elicit a strain of déjà vu. Then, through the fog of pain, lightning struck, and her mind screamed, "Deadbolt, deadbolt, deadbolt!" Sandy just unlocked the front door. The doorknob turned freely in Ashley's hand, surprising him, and he pressed his fingertips against the door and gave it a gentle push, revealing the visitor center's interior in a slow wipe. He saw Sandy Schaefer first, standing in the doorway, her cheeks flushed tomato red.
"I have them," she panted. "I have both of them, trapped in the bathroom."
Both of them? That was a relief to Ashley. Jaybird is here then?
Why would she not be?
Long story.
Sandy grimaced. Of course, of course.
It's under control.
Under control? Really? Because I just maced someone.
Yeah, thanks for that.
All you had to do tonight was nothing, and you still screwed it up.
Sandy coughed in the pepper spray vapor, rubbing her nose.
I mean, God almighty, how'd you let this happen? How'd you let it get this bad?
Ashley was sick of talking. He shoved his way inside, his eyes watering in the acidic air. Sandy tottered backward, suddenly alarmed. All of her harsh words momentarily stuck in her throat. She'd seen the orange Pazlode nailer in his hand. Christ, he loved this thing. "It's under control," he assured her. "It's fine." Lars came inside too, his baby blue ski jacket flaring under a growl of wind, the Beretta Cougar in his hand.
"You're sick,"
the lady snarled, taking another shaky step back.
"You're both sick. You weren't supposed to hurt her."
We improvised.
"I was right about you. About both of you."
"Oh, yeah?" Ashley tapped Lars's chest. "Listen, this'll be good."
"I knew you were both just hillbilly white trash."
"Aw, Sandy, you're hurting my feels."
"It's like you're trying to get caught."
She spat as she talked, a string of saliva swinging off her chin, still tottering backward as they advanced on her with drawn weapons.
"You told me. You said you'd give her clean clothes every day. You said you'd watch her diet. You'd give her books. You promised me you wouldn't harm a hair on Jay's head."
"Technically true. Her hair's fine."
"How can you think this is funny? You're going to rot in prison. You and your little fetal alcohol syndrome."
"Brother," she would have finished, if Ashley hadn't shoved her. He wasn't angry. It's all under control, remember? But it was still a rougher push than he'd intended. Sandy skidded backward, her shoes squealing, slamming her broad ass against the coffee counter.
The radio toppled, antennae clattering. Her god-awful black bowl cut covered her face, and she caught herself on the counter, gasping.
You ruined everything!
Lars aimed his Beretta.
Hey!
Ashley hadn't noticed Ed until now, but yep, there he was. The goateed ex-veterinarian he'd walloped in Go Fish, who hated Apple products, whose biggest fear was facing his estranged family in Aurora this Christmas, stood now by the restrooms, a cross-shaped tire tool in his raised right hand, ready to swing.
I can't let you, Ed said. I can't let you near them.
Sandy, Ashley said quietly, please tell your cousin to drop that thing.
It's a lug wrench, dumbass.
Ed, just do what he says.
But the man stood firm, his back to the restroom doors, perspiration beading on his forehead, the lug wrench trembling in his hand. Ashley didn't break eye contact, taking a little sideways step to give his brother a better shot.
Sandy, he said calmly, speaking through the corner of his mouth, let me be clear. If Cousin Ed here does not place the lug wrench on the floor right now, he will die.
Eddie, please, please, just do what Ashley says.
Ed palmed sweat from his eyes, looking back to Sandy with dawning horror. He had to figure by now, but that had seemed to clinch it.
Jesus Christ, how do you know these people? What's going on?
Sandy winced.
Things got complicated.
What were you doing with that little girl, Sandy?
Drop it, Ashley repeated, taking another step forward. Drop it now and I won't hurt you, I promise. To his right, Lars took a diligent firing stance with the Beretta Cougar, just the way Ashley had once taught him. Two knuckled hands, thumbs high, index finger curling around the trigger. But Ashley knew he wouldn't fire, not without permission. He was waiting, oh so obediently, for a cue to execute Ed, which could come in many forms, including a baseball reference. A drop of sweat hit the floor.
I promise we won't hurt you, Ashley restated. You have my word.
Eddie, please.
Sandy's voice softened.
You're drunk. Just put it down and I'll explain everything.
But to his credit, he didn't give in. He stood firm, not even acknowledging Lars's gun, staring back at Ashley, only Ashley, like he was the only person in the world. Rock-hard eyes, daring him to do it. The lug wrench rattled with adrenaline. When he finally spoke, it was a low growl.
I knew I hated you.
Really? Ashley said. I liked you.
The moment I first met you tonight, when I shook your hand, I somehow knew.
The old animal doctor smiled, a strange, sad smile.
I caught a flash, I think, of exactly who you are, behind the circle time, behind the bad jokes and the card games. You're the sum of every trait I've ever hated in a human being. You're smug, you're irritating, you talk too much, you're not half as clever as you think you are. And under it all, you're pure evil.
And you're batting 1,000, Ashley almost said. But then Ed sighed, and something broke behind his eyes, like he was finally recognizing the futility of this little standoff. He raised both hands and opened his right in grudging surrender. The lug wrench dropped and banged off the tile floor. The echo rang in the air, and Ashley grinned. Lars lowered his Beretta.
Thank you,
Sandy exhaled, tears in her eyes.
Thank you, Eddie, for...
Thwomp.
Ed made an oafish face, like a man surprised by a belch. For a confused moment, He still held eye contact with Ashley, same as before, but his eyes were wide now, panicked, searching.
"You forgot," Ashley told him. "I'm a liar, too."
He lowered the nailer. Ed's eyes followed it, glistening with caged horror. His lips tightened wetly, contracting flesh, like he was trying to speak. But a surreal thing happened. His jaw wasn't moving, not even a centimeter. His voice escaped through his nostrils, a strangled moan. A sloppy red bubble, saliva thickened with blood, blistered through his front teeth and splashed down to the floor. Ashley stepped back, so it wouldn't spatter his shoes. Sandy screamed. It was ear-splitting.
"Lars,"
Ashley snapped his fingers and pointed. "Control her, please." Ed slapped both hands to his throat, clearly trying to scream too, but his body wouldn't let him. His mouth was nailed shut, literally, by a steel framing nail, pierced through his lower jaw at an upward angle, harpooning his tongue to the roof of his mouth. Ashley imagined it wriggling there like a bloody eel, and he was genuinely curious how deep the 16-penny nail had tunneled. Could its needle tip be tickling the floor of Ed's brain? He pushed the man over with his foot. Ed slumped against the regional map of Colorado and slid down the wall, sobbing silently into his hands, blood pooling in his palms and dribbling dime-sized blots on the floor.
"Have a seat.
You should know, Eddie boy, I hate alcoholics." Sandy was in hysterics. She cried out again, a hyena scream, another big glob of shiny snot hanging from her chin. Lars thrust the Beretta's muzzle into her face, and she promptly shut up.
"Change of plans," Ashley said, tapping Lars's shoulder, and the fluorescent lights shuddered above him.
"See, you and me, baby brother, we've already carpet-bombed this little building with forensic evidence, and we don't have nearly enough bleach or time to scrub everything down. So we're going to have to get creative, if you catch my drift."
Lars nodded once. "Spy code message received."
Ashley continued, stepping over a spreading puddle of Ed's blood.
"And as for Darby and..."
Wait. He realized something.
"Wait, wait."
He grabbed Sandy by the elbow, snapping his fingers in her face.
"Hey, look at me. You said you trapped Darby and Jaybird in the restroom, right? The men's restroom?"
She sniffled, looking up at him with bloodshot eyes, and nodded.
"No."
Lars looked at him too, not getting it. But Ashley did.
"No, no, no."
He threw Sandy to the floor, stomping past her, past Ed, toward the restrooms. And he elbowed the men's door open to see an empty room, snowflakes wafting in through the triangular window. Lars watched. Ashley Garver stepped back out and slammed the door violently.
"I'm so sick of that fucking window."
Darby twisted Sandy's key, and the truck's engine revved to life. A diesel roar shattered the silence of the parking lot. Jay crawled into the passenger seat.
"What if Ashley hears?"
She cranked the shifter knob. He just did. She'd already scraped away a viewing hole in the windshield and dug out a few scraping armfuls around the rear tires, just enough to form icy ramps, to gain some momentum. Sandy had come prepared. This F-150 was a beast of a truck with studded tires, jangling chains, and a monstrous 18 inches of lift. If anything parked here could make it down the mountain, it was this rig. And if it couldn't, well, Darby remembered Ashley's lame little Ford joke. Found on road, dead. Let's hope not. She rubbed the chemical sting from her eyes, Her face was still drenched from that carafe, the hot water rapidly cooling on her skin.
"Everyone here is bad," Jay whispered.
"Not me."
"Yeah, but everyone else."
Darby tried not to think about it. Her head was still spinning, too. First, Ashley had presented himself as an ally before betraying her, and now Sandy had revealed her involvement in the kidnapping plot. She couldn't possibly know where Ed Schaefer stood in all of this chaos, but she hoped he was still alive in there. If he's even on our side to begin with. She hoped he was, but with every passing second, the Wanapani rest area seemed to become more hostile. The plastic tightened around her face. Her allies dwindled. Her enemies multiplied. The conspiracy was dizzying.
"What was my bus driver doing here?" Jay asked.
Darby gripped the steering wheel. "Moment of truth." She pressed the gas pedal, and the Ford inched forward in the sludgy snow, tires spinning, throwing sheets of hard ice. Steady pressure under her toes, not too hard, not too soft. Grinding, skidding motion. But it was motion.
"Come on, come on, come on. How far away are the police?"
Jay asked. She remembered the CDOT broadcast Ed had described to her. The jackknifed semi at the bottom of the pass.
7, maybe 8 miles. "That's not far, right?"
Darby spun the wheel into a sloppy half-turn, sliding Sandy's truck into icy divots. Twisting south now. Downhill, down the off-ramp, facing oncoming traffic. If there was any. She searched for the Ford's headlights and flicked them on. Ashley and Lars had already been alerted by the lope of the motor, so stealth was out. They were coming, right now.
"You stole her truck," Jay whispered.
"She pepper-sprayed me. We're even."
The girl laughed, a fragile little sound, as a slice of orange light appeared on the glass behind her.
It was the visitor center's front door swinging open. A shaft of light, and in it, a thin figure. It was Lars. Rodent face, all black shadow. The silhouette raised its right arm, as casually as a man aiming a television remote. And Darby understood instinctively, grabbing Jay by the shoulder and hurling her down against the cold leather seat. "Get down!" Crack! The passenger window exploded. Gummy shards chattered off the dash. Jay yelped, covering her face. Darby huddled low under a hailstorm of settling glass. The gunshot echoed like a firecracker in the thin air. Her body urged her to stay down in her seat, as low as possible, beneath Rodent Face's line of fire. But her brain knew better. "He's coming toward us, right now. Go, go, go!" She found the gas pedal with her toes and stomped it. The truck surged forward, engine thrumming with power, knocking them back into their seats. The world heaved. Luggage thudded noisily in the back. Then Darby righted herself against the clammy leather, peered sideways over the steering wheel, just exposing an eye, an inch, and guided Sandy's F-150 toward the highway. Jay grabbed her wrist.
"Darby!"
"Stay down."
"Darby, he's shooting at us!"
"Yes, I noticed." Crack! A bullet pierced the truck's windshield, and Darby flinched. A chilly breeze whistled to her left. Her side window was blown out, too. Snowflakes blew inside, slashing her cheek.
"He's chasing us," Jay said.
"Drive faster."
Darby was trying. She increased the pressure on the gas, and the truck fishtailed, but accelerated. The tires sprayed ice chips through the windows, peppering the interior with cold grit. Lars fired again. Crack, and the truck's side view mirror exploded. Jay screamed. Darby tugged her down with her free hand.
"Keep your head down. It's fine." "No, it's not,"
He's not going to catch us. Crack! Another hole punched through the windshield. A jagged star shape above Darby's head. But Lars's gunshots sounded different. They were getting hollow, thinning across a widening distance. Yes, her heart fluttered.
Yes, yes, yes! What's happening?
They were rolling down the exit ramp now, gaining speed. Thank Christ for momentum, for gravity, for the steepening grade. Darby gave the pedal another pump of gas, another engine roar. The world tilted downward, and kernels of safety glass skittered loosely around them like gravel.
See, I told you.
Lars fired again. Crack. But missed the truck entirely. He was too far behind them now, vanishing. The orange glow of the Wanapani building was vanishing too, its familiar shapes sinking into the snowy darkness. And Darby was so glad to see it all go. Like awakening from a dread sweat nightmare. She never wanted to see it again. Ever. Good riddance to that shitty place. Jay peered around her seat, watching the pursuing figure of Rodent Face shrink through the perforated rear window. Stay down. And she raised a shaking fist, her ring finger up. It took Darby a moment to understand. Wrong finger.
Oh, Jay corrected. Better?
Better.
Thanks,
said the 7-year-old girl, flipping the bird through the bullet-riddled back window of a stolen pickup truck. And Darby started to laugh. It was involuntary, rattling her lungs like a cough. She couldn't stop it. Oh my God, we actually did it. We got away. Just 7 or 8 miles to go. She dug her iPhone from her pocket and tossed it to Jay. Hey, watch the screen, okay? If you see a signal bar, you hand it to me immediately.
The battery's almost dead.
I know. They scraped downhill, truck tires churning fresh powder like water wheels. She feathered the gas pedal, keeping the Ford moving, keeping the inertia unbroken. That's all it was now. Raw, desperate forward momentum. Like driving across 2 states with a stomach full of Red Bull and ibuprofen, fighting to hold her caffeine buzz, with a cryptic text from Devin shaking in her palm. She's okay right now. Racing Snowmageddon over the pass. Forward, forward, forward. Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't stop. Now they came up on State Route 7. High beams cutting over frozen mounds of windswept snow. Here, she planned to merge into the oncoming northbound lane and pass under the first saucer of light. Darby felt another flicker of excitement in the bottom of her stomach. This was really happening. She'd done it. They were really escaping. Even still, she worried. What if the brothers dug their van out, got it moving in the snow, and chased them down the highway? Then another triumphant shiver as she realized, Ashley doesn't even know where his Astro keys are. He never saw me throw them out the restroom window. Yes, yes, yes. It all felt too good to be true. Hold my phone up, she pointed. Out the window. Jay did this. Crouched on her knees to lean out the passenger window, and Darby suddenly imagined hitting a hard stop and bouncing this poor girl out like a crash test dummy. That'd be tough to explain to her parents. And buckle your seatbelt, she added. Please.
Why?
Because it's the law.
What if we need to get out and run?
Then, Jesus, then you'll unbuckle it.
Yours isn't buckled.
Hey. Darby grinned darkly, doing her best angry dad voice. Don't make me turn this car around. Jay buckled her seatbelt with a metallic snick and pointed at the seat behind Darby's head.
He almost shot you.
She touched the headrest behind her ponytail. Sure enough,
Her fingers found a ragged exit wound, leaking spongy clods of yellow foam. Lars's bullet had sliced an inch high, at most, skimming her scalp before exiting the windshield. Saved by dumb luck, she let out a hoarse laugh.
Good thing I'm 5'2", huh?
Good thing, Jay said. I kind of like you.
Darby guided Sandy's truck to the highway, merging into the desolate oncoming lanes. Under normal traffic conditions, this would be a suicidal maneuver. She reflexively nudged the right turn signal before feeling stupid. Her hands were still shaking. A strange silence settled in, and she cleared her throat, struggling to fill it. So, Sandy's your school bus driver, huh?
Mrs. Schaefer, I think.
Was she nice?
She kidnapped me.
Aside from that?
Not really, Jay shrugged. She subbed for a while. I hardly remember her.
But she sure remembered you, Darby thought. She remembered you and your sleek McMansion and your yuppie parents' daily schedules. A school bus driver made a logical spotter for a ransom operation, and Ashley and Lars were obviously handling the dirty work. But why would Sandy risk meeting Beavis and Butthead in person, all the way out here, in a remote rest stop 2 states away? She watched the snowy highway unfurl, feeling the blood return to her extremities, bracing against the frigid air blowing through the windows. Only now did she start to see the gallows humor of the whole mess. In her own misfortune and poor judgment, she'd unwittingly trusted a kidnapper for the second time tonight. That carafe of scalding water she'd planned to use as a weapon? Jaybird had dumped it over her face, which still tingled with first-degree burns. Nothing had gone according to plan. She couldn't help it, her teeth chattering. I swear to God, Jay, next time you think you recognize someone else here, like if the first Colorado cop we see looks like your orthodontist back in San Diego, please tell me, okay?
My orthodontist lives in L.A., actually.
Los Angeles?
Yeah.
Do you take an airplane to see your orthodontist? Jay winced, embarrassed.
Sometimes.
Seriously?
It's... my parents really like him.
No shit. Did your parents invent Google or something?
You're teasing me.
Darby grinned. Is it too late to ransom you myself?
Maybe not.
Jay grinned back.
You're the one driving a stolen truck.
Brain-jarring halt. The entire world seemed to drop anchor. The truck nosedove into a rise of deep snow, headlights burrowing and going dark, 2 tons of moving parts slamming into a hard stop. An empty Gatorade bottle flew out of the console. Loose glass shards bounced. Darby banged her jaw on the steering wheel, biting her tongue. And in a microsecond, they were stuck again, trapped again, and all of the joy turned sour and tinny, like the taste of blood in her teeth. Oh, no. No, no, no. Jay looked at her.
Good thing you made me fasten my seatbelt.
3:45 a.m. Oh, shit. Darby cranked into reverse. Tried again. Throttled it again and again. No luck. The tires spun until the cab stank with scorched rubber. The truck was stuck there, facing the wrong way on the rightmost northbound lane of State Route 7, just ahead of the blue rest area sign. She craned her neck to look back through the splintered rear window. All in all, she'd made it less than 50 feet down the highway. A quarter mile from the Wanapani building, tops. She could still see the orange parking lot lights through a copse of jagged Douglas firs. It didn't actually matter if they found their keys because Ashley and Lars were still within walking distance. Shit, shit, shit! She punched the wheel, accidentally blaring the horn. Jay looked back, too.
Can they catch up to us?
Yes, yes, yes. 100% yes. No, Darby said. We drove too far, but stay inside. She opened the driver door, sprinkling loose bits of glass, and slid out into the deep snow. She felt old and tired. Her bones ached. Her eyes still stung with pepper spray.
What are you doing?
Digging us out. She circled the Ford's front bumper, squinting in the half-submerged headlights. Her stomach plunged when she saw the huge mound of displaced snow, sloughed into a rolling snowball in front of the truck's grill. It must have been 100 pounds, maybe more, as dense and hopeless as wet cement. She almost collapsed at the sight of it, the enormity of it. But then her eyes fell on the little girl behind the cracked windshield, on the verge of an Addisonian crisis, an anxiety time bomb, a single bad moment away from a seizure, or a coma, or worse. So Darby dropped to her bruised knees and started to dig.
Can I help?
Jay asked.
No, you can't overexert yourself. Just focus on my cell phone, please. Tell me if it gets a signal.
She lifted a crumbling snow boulder and heaved it aside. Her bare fingers throbbed with coldness. 7 miles, she thought, glancing downhill. 7 miles to that jackknifed semi. Could that really be all? She imagined a busy accident scene down there, swarming with first responders, bustling with lights in motion, the red and blue pulse of police light bars, road maintenance crews in reflective jackets, paramedics inserting tubes into throats, dazed victims being evacuated on gurneys. All of that, just 7 miles down the dark road. It didn't seem possible. 7 miles. State Route 7 was raised here where they'd crashed, cresting the upper lip of a switchback. The coniferous trees were at their thinnest, the land rocky and vertical. In daylight, with clear weather, this might have opened up into stunning mountain panorama. But here and now, it was perhaps the only stretch of Backbone Pass that they had even the barest chance of catching a cell signal. To hell with Ashley's nightmare children. In hindsight, she understood that that had almost certainly been another of his lies, another wicked ruse to make her waste her battery. Another gust of wind breathed up the mountain, creaking branches, tugging her sleeves, lifting strange swirls of powder that slithered across the roadway like passing ghosts. "Hey, Jay," she panted as she dug, straining for conversation to fill the eerie silence, trying to keep the mood light, pleasant, unhurried.
What do you want to be when you grow up? I'm not telling.
Why?
You'll tease me again.
Darby leaned around the Ford's headlights, checking the rest stop's exit ramp for the advancing figures of Ashley and Lars. No sign of them yet.
Come on, Jay, you owe me. I took pepper spray in the face for you. It wasn't for me. It was aimed at you.
You know what I mean.
A paleontologist,
the girl answered. A what?
A paleontologist.
Like a dinosaur fossil hunter?
Yeah, Jay said. That's what a paleontologist does.
But Darby wasn't listening. She noticed the truck's tire looked strangely flabby. And now her blood froze. She brushed away another armful of snow and saw a steel circle protruding from the tire's side wall. A nail head. She heard it now. The gentle reptilian hiss. Leaking air. She crawled to the other tire. Two more nails pierced into the treads.